You know, it's interesting that when women were trying to gain suffrage, they first tried a state-by-state method and just found that it wasn't working and then finally went to the national amendment.
I think those of us who are in states that do have an equal rights amendment do know that the results have not been bathrooms that are unisex, that our privacy is protected by the lock, that that women are not going to be drafted immediately. That the arguments that are being used are inaccurate, and it's hard when they're complicated legal issues to really discuss them honestly. It's easier to give a simple untrue answer than it is a complicated honest one,
or to be let off by emotional reactions too, I think. Now, you know, people often wonder as they listen to campaign rhetoric, how sincere are these candidates about all of these, vast proposals and that they keep making? Is there anything that we can tell from the way that the candidates have run their campaigns, the staff, the people that they've hired? Is there anything we can tell from that as to how sincere the candidates are about really including women in the political process?
I mean, I think that's a good point, hopefully we'll be able to follow up on some of the promises that have been made. That's how I look at things. I look at the campaign staff and see what is happening there. It is interesting to know that Carter's campaign staff really does reflect the concern that he expresses for women and minority persons. Of 6 deputy campaign managers, 3 are women. And apparently it goes that way throughout the staff.
I didn't realize that.
It was very interesting to hear that recently. I don't know very much about the Ford re-election committee. I do know, however, that Dr. Ethel Allen, a prominent female Philadelphian, is the head of the Philadelphia re-elect Ford campaign here.
Mm-hmm. Who is Ethel Allen, just for those
who
don't know?
She's a city councilwoman.
Okay, right. Can you be more specific? Do you think that the 3 women that you mentioned who are at the top there in the Carter campaign, is there evidence that they have real power and that they have influence?
From what I understand, that is the case, that they are very important people in the campaign and participate equally with the other campaign managers.
Hmm. Carter has something he calls the 51.3 committee. What's that?
The 51.3% committee was set up, I think, to appeal to women and to get their support for the Carter Mondale campaign. He has specified 4 major reasons. One is the Equal Rights Amendment and an end to all sex discrimination in employment, wages, education, credit, and Social Security. 2 is health and child care legislation to help both homemakers and working parents. 3 is the appointment of qualified women to positions throughout the government. And 4 is seeking the advice of women, not only in the traditional women's issues, but also on matters such as war and peace, the budget, economy, conservation, and energy. It was the feeling of the Carter campaign that in order to include women, that they could not go through the traditional processes, since so few women exist traditionally in even ward politics and the traditional political organizations. So that this special committee was set up nationally with representatives of the various states and locally with women who were interested in these issues and were interested in politics. Ford does not have a similar kind of organization. And I heard a representative of his campaign on the Today program, and when she was asked about that, replied that he did not feel that it was necessary to single out women, and that women's issues were the same as everyone else's issues. And I think this really is reflective of both candidates and how they view women and women's issues. Jimmy Carter sees women as an important constituency, and Ford sees women as Americans who are interested in the same things and do not particularly have any special interests.
Why might there be a fallacy in the fourth position?
Well, I think, as I tried to point out before, that women are interested in many of the same issues as men. But there are special, to me it hardly needs explaining at this point. It is so clear that, one of the things is that women have children. So that their needs are different. You know, we talked about health care. They need to make sure that they have adequate coverage of pregnancy-related conditions. They need to have child care because it is usually the women who are taking care of children. They need protection against discrimination because it's women who have been discriminated against. So we do have special needs.
These things seem so obvious, but yet no one's paid that much attention to them for 200 years, so it does bear bringing up again, I think.
That's true. Yeah.
Okay. Also, Carter has something he's called the talent bank.
Mm-hmm.
And he states that this is an attempt to seek out people of both sexes to fill important positions if he were to be elected president. Do you think that he is really making a dedicated search to find qualified women?
Well, apparently that is one of the tasks of the 51.3 committee, and something very concrete that they're involved in is collecting names of women. And there is a belief, and perhaps that's where these women working high up in the campaign have been influential. There is, or appears to be, a strong belief that qualified women do exist out there. We know that's true. And that they want to find them and bring them into the mainstream of political activity. And there's no question in my mind that we will get more responsive legislation and policy that will deal with our needs when people who have experienced things like having to find a babysitter are in those positions.
That's a good point. In the Sunday Inquirer, there was an article by Elsa Goss entitled "Women in Politics, Not a Vintage Year." And she notes a number of things that seem to indicate that women are really pretty politically powerless. She mentions that Bella Abzug lost in the Senate primary and, of course, had to give up her House seat, that women hold only 4% to 7% of all public offices nationally. There are only 19 women in the House of Representatives and not one woman in the Senate, that there are therefore only 4% women in the 94th Congress, and that there's only one female governor, of course, in Connecticut out of all the 50 states. Now, it seems there's a funny dichotomy here, that where feminism is credited with everything from rising crime to the breakup of the nuclear family, why do women still seem to have so little political power?
It's a good question, and it certainly is a dismal reality. We're new to this, and women have not been active politically except on the bottom line. You know, we're licking the envelopes and delivering the flyers, but beyond that, women really have not participated, and I think that a recognition in this campaign is, and I think the reason partly that the 51.3% committee was formed, is that women potentially have tremendous power, that they are 51.3% of the population, and that if women all voted, this election clearly could be determined by women.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very strong statement and reality, that women, if they did identify themselves as a constituency, could have tremendous power. We don't have it now, and I think that some of it is because we don't identify ourselves as a special interest group. And some of it is that some of the women that have been involved also don't identify themselves with women's issues, that we find, you know, mm-hmm. we just talked about Phyllis Schlafly, that we find politically motivated women who are there for some of the same reasons that men are there, which are some of which I think we could consider highly desirable, and some which we would consider less desirable. Just the kind of raw desire for power and people who are there to protect special interests and not the interests of most people in the United States, and certainly not our interests as women.
Well, I think you were right. Women really are new at exercising any kind of power. And let's face it, it's very hard for newcomers to break into, especially the political, let alone the economic structure. It's based on so many informal agreements and so many informal, you know, you help me, I'll help you type of things, which...
It's clear that those smoky back rooms still exist, and many of them are still sex segregated, and that the chums, the school chums from some of the prestigious schools are still mostly men, and it is still hard for women in politics. We certainly saw that with Bella. But
women don't have funds either, money to put them through.
That's true, and that is increasingly a important part of a political campaign. One day, hopefully, we will have a woman as president, vice president in the Senate. That will only happen when we as women do vote carefully and begin to have confidence in ourselves that we are just as capable for being a committee person, for being congressperson, for being senator, for being president, right, as those people who are now running.
That's right. During the last 2 years, we've gotten to know not only Gerald Ford, but quite a bit more about Betty Ford, and I think many people have really been impressed by the strength of her opinions, by her honesty, and also her feminist position on many issues. I think this has helped Ford among many women during this campaign. Do you feel that a vote for Gerald Ford is any kind of a guarantee that the ideas of Betty Ford will carry more weight or would be given more attention?
Well, I agree definitely with what you said about Betty Ford, and she does appear to be a woman of terrific integrity and of a real mind of her own. Unfortunately, she's not running for president. And I think that many men and women will cast their vote for Betty Ford. And I think that is not a vote for Gerald Ford. He has consistently disagreed with her. And clearly the platform of the Republican Party does not reflect the kinds of concerns and issues which she has expressed. It reminds me of a personal kind of recollection of a friend of mine who's a minister, and his wife telling me that in the interview for when he was becoming the pastor, that with the church committee, that they interviewed her, and she said, "You must remember, you are hiring him and not me. I don't come along with the job." And I think that it's wonderful if a First Lady does have commitments to social issues and does continue to express her points of view and to advocate for those things that she believes in. But she's not in a position to make those decisions.
And she doesn't have the power.
That's right.
Recently, the National Women's Agenda, which is, I understand, a coalition of over 100 women's groups, had a conference in Washington, and both of the candidates were invited to speak. Now, Ford did not attend, but Jimmy Carter did. At the conference, he offered a 9-point plan on issues of concern to women, and I'll go through them just quickly and maybe get your impressions of the conference and of Carter's speech. Now, in the speech, he said that in his 9-point program, he was going to deal for working women. He advocated a comprehensive daycare program, a tough enforcement of anti-discrimination laws, and a federal hiring policy that would put far more women into the top grades and throughout the entire government. For women business owners, he said he would see that laws forbidding discrimination in awarding federal contracts are enforced and would act to curb discrimination against women in obtaining credit and insurance. For women students, he promised efforts to end inequities in awarding federal aid. For housewives, he said he would help homemakers achieve equity in Social Security calculation, in divorce proceedings, and in the probate of estates. And for mothers entering the labor market, Carter pledged to provide legal counseling and to encourage government and private industry to offer flexible hours and part-time work. Now, these are words. According to your impressions, you attended the conference, I think. How did you feel? Did he come across honest?
Well, it was a very interesting experience for me in Washington. It was a very exciting conference to begin with because it was the first time, although many of these national organizations, ranging from the Campfire Girls to Zonda International to the National Organization for Women, did get together at one place at one time to express their mutual concerns and to rally around the National Women's Agenda, which is a 12-point program that calls for adequate compensation for meaningful work, participation in the political process, child care, health care, fair treatment with in housing and in the criminal justice system, etc. And we were anxious as a national coalition to hear from both candidates and what they had to say in regards to women and women's issues and concerns. And we're disappointed when Ford did not respond to our invitation.
What was his reasons?
I don't believe that any were given, but he just couldn't come. I think that we also were suspicious of being courted by any presidential candidates. And Jimmy Carter did give the speech and mentioned the points that you outlined. I must say that I came away very excited that not only did Jimmy Carter say those things, but he talked in very personal terms. He talked about the women in his life and how his positions on women's issues developed. And he talked a lot about his mother and his wife and his daughter. And it's interesting, he ended his speech by saying that he hoped that one day his daughter Amy would have just as fair a chance to be a doctor as well as a nurse, a lawyer as a legal secretary, or a president as well as a president's daughter.
That's a good quote.
I think that epitomized his gut understanding. At another point in the speech, he was talking about his belief in the American people and their genuineness and compassion, etc., etc. And he talked about brotherhood in this country. And all of the women's eyebrows raised, and there was a lot of noise around the room. And he very self-consciously but easily corrected himself and said brotherhood and sisterhood. And I thought it was interesting that he could deal with his own sexism and recognize that that he too was not immune. Another thing that I guess that impressed me most was the fact that Jimmy Carter, by coming to the conference, recognized that women as a group were a real constituency. And I don't believe any other presidential candidate has done that. And he said very clearly that the women's movement and people who are concerned about these issues need to be more militant, more eloquent, and more active in pursuing these concerns. And I agree. I hope we can live up to that as a group and really function as a lobby that will advocate for women and their needs. I think that that's an exciting challenge, and I did feel that we might have a strong political fight, and I think there was recognitions of competing interests and a very active political process by which decisions were made, but that at least our positions would be heard.
Now, Mr. Ford has pretty much, in the campaign, attempted to show women what he has done in the 2 years since he has been in office. His special assistant for women, who is Janine M. Holm, sums up his accomplishments as follows. Since taking office, Mr. Ford has also supported and signed legislation eliminating discrimination based on sex in housing, credit, education, and appointment to the service academies. He has appointed more women to top-level jobs on his staff and throughout his administration than any president in history. How do you respond to those accomplishments that Mr. Ford feels that he's brought about?
My feeling is that many of the specifics are very accurate. I wouldn't see that as a very glorious record. It's certainly appointing more women. Hopefully that would be the case, since
you could hardly avoid it almost.
There were so few women that, you know, appointing a couple of more would be more than anybody else. I certainly think that some of his appointments have been good ones, and we have been watching with great interest Ann Armstrong, but that a commitment to women is more than appointments. It's a commitment to stabilizing the economy and jobs and health care and child care. I think in terms of our everyday lives, that's what really counts.
In other words, simply doing the obvious is not taking an active enough stand. And you feel that Mr. Ford has simply done kind of what anyone in that position might have done with respect to women?
I think that he has done some things that have benefited women. But that, for the most part, the lot for women has not changed.
Before closing, Joanne, tell us a little bit more about the Women's Health Concern Committee, of which you're a member.
The Women's Health Concerns Committee is a coalition of approximately 50 groups, health agencies and women's groups concerned about women's health, which was formed to follow up on the 1974 Conference on Women and Health that was co-sponsored by the Pennsylvania Department of Health and the Commission for Women. Since then, we have served more or less as a clearinghouse for the public and the professional community.
What does that mean? If a woman has a specific problem, she can call you and expect to get information as to where she can go for help?
Well, we are in the process of putting together a guide to women's health services for the five-county area, which will be available, hopefully, within a few months. And we do have extensive files on women's health issues that are available to groups, and some pamphlets on questions to ask your doctor, what one woman can do, and how to get involved in women's health advocacy groups. Our committee meets once a month and basically has worked to advocate for women both as healthcare providers and consumers and to facilitate concerted actions around particular issues. For example, we have worked to get women on the board of directors of Blue Cross of Greater Philadelphia. We have testified and were successful in getting the amounts of money allocated for family planning services raised and in getting Women in Transition, a group that deals with women who have separated or divorced, funded from Philadelphia Mental Health Mental Retardation money. And we hope in the future to begin doing some advocacy around women and drug and alcohol and women and occupational health and safety this year. And we do know people who can speak at meetings and do have good material for individual women and groups.
This sounds very helpful. How could people get in touch with you if they wanted to talk directly?
If they'd like to receive our newsletter that they can subscribe to through Telewoman or some of our educational material, they can contact us at 112 South 16th Street, and that's in Philadelphia, 19102, or call us at 563-0839.
Okay, thank you very much, Joanne.
Oh, dear, what can the matter be? Dear, dear, what can the matter be? Oh, dear, what can the matter be? Women are wanting to vote. Women have husbands, they are protected. Women have sons by whom they're directed. Women have fathers, they're not neglected. Why are they wanting to vote? Women have homes, there they should labor. Women have children whom they should favor. Women have time to learn of each neighbor. Why are they wanting to vote? Oh dear, what can the matter be? Dear, dear, what can the matter be? Oh dear, what can the matter be? Women are wanting to vote. Women can dress, they love society. Women have cash with its variety. Women can pray with sweetest piety. Why are they wanting to vote? Women are preaching to sinners today. Women are healing the sick by the way. Women are dealing out laws they may. Why are they wanting to vote? Oh dear, what can the matter be? Dear, dear, what can the matter be? Oh dear, what can the matter be? Women are wanting to vote. Women are traveling about here and there. Women are working like men everywhere. Women are crowding then claiming 'tis fair. Why are they wanting to vote? Women have reared all the sons of the brave. Women have shared in the burdens they gave. Women have labored your country to save. That's why they're wanting to vote. So it's, oh dear, what can the matter be? Dear, dear, what can the matter be? Oh dear, what can the matter be when men want every vote?
That's about it for the Women's Consciousness Raising Hour. Don't forget to vote. Your vote counts. Goodbye for now.
Hark the sound of women's voices rising in this might. 'Tis the daughters of Columbia pleading for their right. Flock around Victoria's banner, raise the signal still. Brothers, won't you share your freedom? Help us and we will. See emblazoned on our standard words of purest gold. Womankind shall not be fettered, nor her birthright sold. Never yield to rank injustice, alter evil laws.